Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Today's podcast, our air date is April 4th, 2018, on Chewbacca's Black Experience Enhanced. 50 years ago today, Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee at the Lorraine Motel. Born in Atlanta, Georgia, January 15th, 1929. And we're going to go by some of his famous quotes, but this is one of his quotes that he mentioned in his letter from a Birmingham jail. Is that a black man's wife or mother is never respectfully referred to as Mrs. We are also reaching out to our elders who are around in the year 1968, 50 years ago today, to reflect on history here. And please give us a call here at Chewbacca's Black Experience Enhanced at area code 646-564-9630. Also, too, I would like to announce that we are coming to you from San Joaquin County, California today. We are having our opening salutations here. And we want to give our shout-outs to New Era Chicago, to Black Eye Stand Radio, to Liberation Minded Media, to Jay Dizzle, to Joseph Boyd, to Mr. Keith Morris, to New Black Knowledge Radio, and all those that we interact with on these platforms. Also, too, we want to emphasize, by all means, if you know over there, to MelanatedPeople.net, it's Black Internet, what have you. But also, too, ladies and gentlemen, as Dr. King had stated, you know, in his last address, that we as a people will get to the promised land. In the second half of the show, we want to reflect back on the 50 years since his assassination. Has things really changed, or really have they gotten worse? Dr. King has also has stated, from what I understand, toward the end of his life, that he might have led our people into a burning house in regards to integration. So all are welcome to give us a call here on Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced on this historical day of April 4th, 2018. Also, too, I see we have a caller calling in from area code 410 with the last 45463. Okay, we're keying you in. Good evening to you, and how you doing today?
What's up, brother? This is Brother Isaiah again calling and seeing what's up with tonight's show.
Yes, sir. Yeah, definitely appreciate you calling in, Brother Isaiah, because this is a historical show tonight. This is a very, very significant historical date in Black history tonight. We're going to be going over some facts tonight. It's because today Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee, at the Lorraine Motel, where he was shot in the neck and he was pronounced dead at the hospital, I believe, about 1 hour and a half later. As we're going to bring some facts out about him, and we see we have another caller there that who we're going to be bringing in here from area code 240 with the last 42530. We think we know who this is. Good evening, caller.
It's the queen in the
house.
How you doing this evening, sis?
I'm hanging in there, baby. I'm a little tired, but I'm okay.
Yeah. Good. Okay, so we have Brother Isaiah with us once again on tonight's show of Shabaka's Black Experience, where it is 50 years since the assassination of Dr. King in Memphis, Tennessee. Here I want to read a few facts here about the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., and this is according to the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission's of the Southern Baptist Convention. Today marks the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. Now, they wrote this here 1 year ago. Here are five facts that should be known about the killing of Dr. King in Memphis, Tennessee. Number one, the killing of Dr. King in 1968 was, as we all know, the second attempt on his life. It's because in the year 1958, before he was 10 years before he was assassinated, he was nearly stabbed to death in Harlem when a mentally ill person who believed he was conspiring against her with communists stabbed him in the chest with a letter opener. He underwent emergency surgery and remained hospitalized for several weeks and made a full recovery. And the doctor who performed the operation said that had Dr. King sneezed or coughed, the weapon would have penetrated, you know, the main artery in his heart. And he was just a sneeze away from death. And this year was in 1958 in Harlem. And then, as we know, is that on April 4th, 1968, in Memphis, Tennessee, 50 years ago today, allegedly Dr. King was assassinated by the 277th wanted man on the FBI's most wanted fugitives list. And that man's name was James Earl Ray. And in the year 1967, he escaped from the Missouri State Prison by hiding in a truck, transporting bread from the prison Bakery. On the day of the assassination, Ray took a room in a boarding house that had a view to the Lorraine Motel where Dr. King and his entourage had frequently stayed while they visited Memphis. And as we all know, ladies and gentlemen, is that Dr. King was there was to take part in the sanitation workers' strike. Where black workers were bringing about some demands, you know, for equality while being a sanitation worker there in the city of Memphis. Dr. King was on the balcony of the motel when he was shot. He was hit by a 30-06 caliber rifle bullet that entered his right jaw that traveled through his neck, severing his spinal cord, and it stopped in his shoulder blade. Okay, Ralph Abernathy cradled King's head while Morrell McCullough, undercover Memphis police officer, used a towel to try to stop the flow of blood from Dr. King as he had laid on the balcony. He was taken to St. Joseph's Hospital, where doctors attempted emergency surgery before pronouncing him dead at 7:05 p.m. He was 39 years old, ladies and gentlemen, and I remember this here. I think I was about 8 years old, and I was looking at cartoons on TV when the special report had came on, and my mother was in the kitchen fixing dinner, and she had asked what was the special report. And I says, Mama, I don't know. They just said some man named Martin Luther King was shot and killed in Memphis. And when you're a child, you know, you don't know nothing. But at that point in history, which I was unaware of at the time, you know, great change was happening all across the United States. They had riots in 100 cities in the United States, Baltimore.
Yes.
Let me see, Chicago was one of them. In addition to Detroit, I believe, as well, too, and I think in a
Washington,
D.C. area.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
oh,
ma'am.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Uh-huh. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So nice.
And what had happened was is that, you know, they said that altogether 43 men and women were killed, approximately 3,500 people were injured, and 27,000 were arrested. And then they had over 58,000 National Guardsmen and Army troops joined local state and police forces in areas where they were having uprisings. And as historian Peter B. Levy says, during Holy Week in 1968, the United States experienced its greatest wave of social unrest since the Civil War. Now, you have to keep in mind, folks, that this is only 100 years since that we had been about a slave. See? But also, too,
hey,
ladies and gentlemen, from what I understand, when Dr. King was killed, and we're going to be mentioning that there, too, is because keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, and please spread the word that we will be back on the air in 48 hours on April the 6th, 2018. Also, too, marking 50 years since little Bobby Hutton was killed in Oakland, California by the police department as well, too. So definitely, you know, give us a call in on that one here, too, at 646-564-9630. So therefore, ladies and gentlemen, as 100 cities, you know, had burned throughout the United States for a few days after the murder of Dr. King, I was a child, and we're asking for those to call in the same age group, you know, to give us some remembrance, you know, to relate to the generations after us of what was going on at that time. The Black Liberation Movement had saw a surge in its membership, mainly with the Black Panther Party after Dr. King's assassination throughout the United States. And as we all know, they had various chapters throughout the U.S. that we have mentioned on previous shows. So therefore, ladies and gentlemen, the National Guard, you know, was out. Was quite turmoil, and I do recall that the main news sources at the time on television were CBS, NBC, and ABC, and they had their special reporters out there, Howard K. Smith, Dan Rather, Chet Hentley, David Brinkley, you know, reporting news throughout the nation of what was going on. And then I believe that he, brother Kwame Ture was out, you know, on the lecture circuit as well, too, with Black Power and about defending ourselves and to organize of what we were doing. And then, of course, too, is that the Black Panther Party had been emphasizing point number 7 as well, too. Also, too, they had been emphasizing their programs of the community becoming self-sufficient and doing for self. Now,
what's
point
number
5? Okay, point number 7 of the Black Panther Party, ma'am, was an immediate end to police brutality.
Okay.
So what was happening is what it made, you know, the Black community extremely very, very angry right here is that Dr. King, you know, was a civil rights man and he was a man of peace. You see what I mean? And, of course, as we all know, that Brother Malcolm was assassinated 3 years earlier in 1965, and Dr. King had led a series of civil rights marches as well, too. But also, too, ladies and gentlemen, that we also want to mention is that Dr. King was significant in the Montgomery bus boycott, and I've stated this here on previous podcasts of Chewbacca's Black Experience Enhanced as well, too, of how the Montgomery boycott of the buses there have proved the economical power that we have, and we just have to come up with some innovation and ingenuity to use that power to be more efficient of what is currently going on. And then after we discuss, you know, the historical ramifications of what went on this historical day 50 years ago, we would definitely want to look at things in retrospect of Dr. King and in retrospect of what is going on today. Now, after a two-month-long international manhunt, James Earl Ray was captured June 8, 1968 in London, England at the Heathrow Airport. On March 10, 1969, James Earl Ray pleaded guilty to King's murder and was sentenced to 99 years in a Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary in Tennessee. No testimony was heard in his trial. Now, get this, people. Now, James Earl Ray later recanted his confession and claimed that he was the victim of a conspiracy. Okay, and then, of course, ladies and gentlemen, we do know what was going on at that time in history with the counterintelligence program that was launched by J. Edgar Hoover, and his philosophy is that the organization of Negroes was a threat to national security, and J. Edgar Hoover definitely was not a friend of Dr. King. Now, members of Dr. King's family, including his son Dexter, publicly met with James Earl Ray in 1977, and they began arguing for a reopening of his case. The government investigations concluded that Ray was a lone assassin. Later that same year, Ray became the 351 man on the FBI's most wanted list, fugitive list, after he and 6 other convicts escaped from the prison. He was recaptured 3 days later and given another year in prison, bringing his sentence to a total of 100 years. And from what I understand, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that James Earl Ray did die in prison. And then, of course, there's something that I heard that the United States government had made a settlement with Dr. King's family due to the conspiracy aspect of it. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, you're here on Chewbacca's Black Experience Enhanced, and we're tonight's subject is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. 50 years later after his assassination. And also, two sisters, DeMace and Brother Isaiah, what are your comments on 50 years later after his assassination? Has any progress really has been made in race relations or his so-called dream that he was having when he gave his infamous speech in 1963?
Okay, no progress. No progress for the betterment.
Yes,
people.
Ma'am.
None. If
yes, I agree.
Anything, it's gotten worse.
Yes, I agree. I agree. It's because after 1968, during the presidential election, as we all know, Robert Kennedy was running in primary elections in the California primary of June 4th, 1968, where he himself was murdered in the city of Los Angeles. But
yeah,
it just goes to show what the turmoil of which was going on 50 years ago. Also, too, ladies and gentlemen, this from what I recall as a child of what my memories was, is that this is definitely the year that had spearheaded that definite pro-black, pro-identity movement, is because you had a lot of recording artists coming from Africa, making a lot of big hits here over the United States at that time in history, and one of them was by the name of Miriam Makeba, and another one was by the name of Mr. Hugh Master Caleb, who wrote Grazing in the Grass. That was a big hit for him in the year 1968, and Miriam Makeba, who did a song called Pata Pata. But also, too, at that time in history, too, there was a great surge in black pride going on, is because, as we all know, black people were processing their hair and wearing conks and what have you. So then they started embracing, you know, the natural hairstyle. And I definitely remember women and members of the Black Panther Party at that time in history, too, in the summer of 1968, placing great pride on black identity and black culture as well, too. Now, in the 50 years of since of Dr. King's assassination, due to these black politicians who have been letting us down pretty much here in the millennial, in the late 1990s, at all levels, state and local and what have you. But really, what progress has been made. Now, all the benefits and laws that were changed. Yes, sir, Brother Zay, you're right. You're glad you brought it up. No progress is because, see, all these other groups of people are benefiting from the civil rights laws that were passed at the expense of Dr. King's life and a lot of other people who were perished out there in those civil rights marches as well, too. You see, also, to those, you know, who were sitting there at the lunch counter, whatnot, you know, doing the sit-in movements right there, you know, if memory calls there, too, in my early childhood. But also, too, ladies and gentlemen, is that from what I understand, that Dr. King was about to lead a march that same year in 1968 called the Poor People's Campaign. And also, too, at that time, I remember is that the Black Panther Party was doing a lot of emphasis of having community ambulances, community health clinics, community tutoring programs, and of course, as we all know of them, with the free breakfast programs, you know, for school age children to get educated. Okay, so it's very, very important that our youth know this. Now, get this here, Brother Isaiah. Those of you who were born in the 70s and in the 80s, definitely you would have to dig deep for this history of the late 50s and of the 60s and of the late 60s and of the early 1970s, is because, see, a lot of this is that they're trying to erase, and a lot of it that they, our youth, are dumbing down on. Yes, see.
Right.
And one is this term here that we use so loosely with these guys in the rap industry, which I do not understand, is the NGR term. But as I stated on previous podcasts, please be sure, you know, to have some equality in your lyrics and use the other racial derogatory epithets as well, too, just to keep it in balance. I mean, since we all so colorblind and we don't see color and all that bullshit. Okay.
Yeah,
but however,
yeah,
that's the Kool-Aid. Yeah, see, that's the Kool-Aid. Right. They want us to believe that the problem doesn't
the Kool-Aid
exist.
And the brainwash.
And then also, too.
And the brainwash.
Oh, yes, sir, most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. You know, of the brainwash. You see, and then keep in mind, too, is that J. Edgar Hoover had used the counterintelligence program against Dr. King's SCLC organization and various other civil rights organizations. You see what I mean? At this time in history. See? Now, also, too, there was when Dr. King had tried to integrate Birmingham, I believe that this is 1963 when he did write the letter from the Birmingham jail that we had mentioned earlier. And to paraphrase the letter from what I've read of it, he was also talking about to the white clergy of why they were not down there in Birmingham joining him in the civil disobedience of what he was known for. You see, so he was kind of like putting them on Front Street, bringing it face-to-face with themselves, just like what the Black Panther Party was doing, was bringing the American justice system face-to-face with its hypocrisy as well, too. And we'll be definitely talking about more on that on our next show, which is 2 days from now, April 6th, 2018, entitled Lil Bobby Hutton. And we'll be touching briefly on that a little bit toward the end of this show. So anyway, our callers are welcome to give us a call here on Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced at area code 646-564-9630. Press 1 to speak live on the air. Now also to Sister DeMacy, as you recall, back in grade school, like when I used to make our children say the Pledge of Allegiance and whatnot. Then also too about how that they would talk about Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, since the years of his assassination, but the school curriculum would omit, if I recall, in the late 60s and in the 1970s, of the contributions that other people and other organizations had made, you know, to our cause, struggle, and liberation. And it's very, very sad that history is going to choose, I'm sorry, it's very, very sad that we allow, you know, our oppressor to choose, you know, the days that we should remember as well, too, and only remembering a great deal about certain individuals and very, very little about other individuals who all contributed greatly to the struggle for our liberation. As ourselves. Also, too, we definitely, like I said, want to give a shout out there to the great work of what New Era Chicago has been doing lately, raising the awareness level there on Chicago South Side, not to patronize with businesses that discriminate us. And what they do, they go out there and shut them down. They go out there, you know, with their crew, and they shut it down, and they tell the people of the community, do not shop at this gas station or this business, and here's the reason why. And then they also would definitely emphasize to the community, here's the next closest black-owned business here offering the same services. So therefore, we have to, you know, progress and pick up and carry on the spirit of all our ancestors that are no longer with us, Dr. King included, Kwame Ture, Brother Malcolm, Huey, and what have you, Robert L. Williams, of course, Harriet Tubman, Brother Sin Q, as we all know, who led the rebellion down the Amistad, and all of those, you know, who got upset about our condition and went out here and did something about it. And the very, very sad part, too, ladies and gentlemen, of how the educational system here in the inner cities, of how they downplay our history and how they downplay our contribution, you know, to the progress and to the development of the world, too. They're saying. So, like I said, this is Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced. Also, too, ladies and gentlemen, definitely check our like page on Facebook. You could definitely follow us on Twitter, Shabaka's BLKEXP. You can follow us there on Twitter. Follow us. We will follow you. Also, too, you can go to our Facebook page as well, too, Shabaka Sankara. So, we're asking our callers once again to definitely give us a call here at area code 646-564-9630. And what we're going to do here, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take us here a brief intermission here by the one and only Mr. Wes Montgomery here with the classic set that was going on there in the 1960s with Bumpin' on Sunset. Thank you. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that there is the one and only Mr. Wes Montgomery with Bumpin' on Sunset, which was a very, very huge hit of his there in the late 1960s. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, our episode is April 4th, 1968, 50 years later. We're discussing in retrospect of social issues on this historical day in regards to contemporary events currently. And we're inviting all our listeners in to call in with their questions, comments, and concerns. And also, too, as we all know, that Martin Luther King Jr. was murdered April 4th, 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee. And also, too, we were also having an open mic discussion about his impact on history. So definitely give us a call at 646-564-9631 and press 1 to speak live on the air. But as we were saying here, DeMacy, earlier, okay, just looking back 50 years, just what progress, if any, has been made for us as a people?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I don't know. The opportunities for our financial situation has increased. I mean, it's really good out here in terms of that, depending upon how far you want to go. It all depends on how far you want to go. As opposed to, I was a small child back then, so I don't really know what it was like, but I can imagine that they pretty much had their foot on our necks, you know.
Their foot on
the adults' necks, where they would have never have had the opportunities that we have today in business.
Like
in corporations or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Upward mobility as far as, as far as jobs is concerned, educational opportunities, upward mobility, getting into the, quote, mainstream of the American society. As Dr. King himself has stated, that we have to look at shortly before his death, is that he said he might have led our people into a burning house with the concept of integration. But however, the night before he was assassinated, we all remember his infamous lines that he had been to the mountaintop and that he have seen the promised land and that he might not make it there with us, but we as a people will get there. Now, looking at retrospect and that, I don't think that we got there, but also, too, we got a caller here coming back in here at the 410 area code. I believe that there's Brother Isaiah. Okay, and also, too, caller, that we see you right there coming out the 202 area code as well, too, and we're going to invite them in shortly. But as we look back here in retrospect with the dumbing down of black youth today in regard to their history, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. So what we're having right here currently in these contemporary times, ladies and gentlemen, is de-evolution. We're moving backwards. We've got a lot of our youth who don't know about key figures in their history. You see what I mean?
They very rare teach us about our history. We have to do that on our own individually.
Absolutely. And this is why, you know, looking 50 years later, there's the more emphasis for us to get our children about these public indoctrination centers of brainwashing, homeschool our children ourselves, you see. And we definitely appreciate those, you know, who can call in, you know, who are around 50 years ago on this historical day. And then for those of you who were not, definitely please give us a call in and do your researches, because this here was a very, very significant time in our history, and it was a very, very major shift in our history as well, too, is because as there were those who have stated that Dr. King, who was a crusader of nonviolence, but yet though he goes out here and he was murdered, and then you had other various factions in the black community that were forming and exercising their constitutional rights of self-defense. But history, you know, tries to erase them from that. So this is very, very important for those in their 40s and in their late 30s to know this history, is because this is the information that they omitted from when you were going to school. They say.
Do you remember the news announcement on the television was where I think, you know, I'm trying to think back, that Martin Luther King was at some sort of a hotel.
Yeah, the Lorraine Motel in Memphis.
He was, okay, got you. And he was up on like the second or the third level, and
yes,
that's where
he
got shot, right?
Right, and he was there with Jesse Jackson. He was there with Rob Abernathy as well, too. You know, when he was shot, and the assailant that you know, had taken his life. And I do remember a lot of radio shows, people were calling in, venting and what have you. But also, too, what had happened to people, and this is very, very important for our young people to understand, is that the Black Liberation Movement got extremely pissed off with this. And as we had stated earlier, you know, in our podcast, you know, about the facts of where they had had riots in 100 cities the night that Dr. King was killed, except for Los Angeles. It's because riots had happened in Los Angeles 3 years later. And I do remember growing up in Los Angeles at that time, and L.A. was very, very quiet. But however, they did have the National Guard activated in all the states around the country. And as we had stated here, as we did our research, is that they had, you know, 58,000 military troops throughout the nation, and they also had troops up there at the United States Capitol for the first time since the ending of the Civil War, which was about 100 years earlier prior to Dr. King's assassination. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, please give us a call at 646-564-9630. Press 1 to speak live on the air. And that will definitely put you in queue to join in with our conversation. Definitely spread our link around the internet, Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced. And our short link here is tobtr.com/small/106-74221. And we come on a weekly basis every Sunday, generally at 6 p.m. But however, we're having a special edition tonight and Friday night, April the 6th, in 2 days, on the 50th year marking the assassination of Dr. King. And 2 days later, from now, we'll be having a show of the 50th year since little Bobby Hutton was murdered in Oakland, California, by the Oakland Police Department. And on that show, ladies and gentlemen, we are definitely reaching out to all of those who are around at that time with that situation in the 510 area code to definitely, you know, give us a call in and drop knowledge on it and share the experience. This is Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced, and we deal with the emphasis on the Black experience from the beginning of time to 10 minutes ago. And today we're dealing with this historical date on the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, who was also a graduate of Boston College and Morehouse College. As we all know, he married Coretta Scott. You know, they had a family together. And I believe recently that Dr. King's granddaughter had spoke in public in Washington, D.C. in regard to gun violence. And then in addition to, ladies and gentlemen, on our show on April the 6th, I will be speaking briefly about what is happening in a few miles north of me here in California of what's happening up in Sacramento on that. But also, too, I see that we have a caller here out of area code 202 with the last 47971. You're on Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced tonight here, April 4th, 2018. Please comment on where you're calling from and what is your name.
I'm Vera Hope from Washington, D.C.
Oh, how you doing, Ms. Hope? Definitely. Thank you for joining us, ma'am. Appreciate you there so very, very much, and welcome to Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced, ma'am. And I've been checking your post out today where you were making a lot of historical references of what went on 50 years ago today. And would you please enlighten our listeners of what you recall this tragic day in history?
Just where to begin to speak about this day in isolation really doesn't give you a picture of what led up to it. It's not a day of isolation, especially in D.C. Let me reach back and give you some background.
Yes, ma'am.
In the fortnight preceding the King assassination, a young man was jaywalking on U Street. U Street is to D.C. what 125th Street is to Harlem. So this young man is jaywalking. He was jaywalking. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And a rookie cop stopped him. And when he stopped this young man, as was customary at that time, the young man went to reach for his Afro pick to comb his hair, because this is what young men did when they would talk. You know, they would pick their hair out. So he went to reach for his Afro pick to pick his hair out, and of course, the rookie white cop shot him point blank range in the middle of the afternoon, the rush hour.
Wow.
So, I was about a block away when that happened. Let me give you some background about me.
Sure.
At the time, I was a volunteer. I was 19 years old. I was a volunteer at the SNCC office. And our chairman was Stokely Carmichael, later to be known as Kwame Ture.
Yes, ma'am.
And I took classes at the New School of Afro-American Thought, which was across the street. And the New School of Afro-American Thought was the go-to place. That was the go-to place on the East Coast. Outside of Harlem, that was the place to be. That the thinkers of the time, from Kenneth Clark to Chuck Stone, Sterling Brown, Sonia Sanchez, Imama Baraka, Stokely Carmichael, H. Rapp Brown, Dr. Francis Wilson, Isaac Musa, Byron Shango, Alex Haley, all these people would be there at any given time. Sun Ra, Muhammad Ali, Tommy Smith, John Carlos. This is so just to give you some background of what was happening, this is in one block on 14th Street, which was in close proximity to where this young brother was shot.
Okay.
So when that happened, we dispersed to the middle of the street and just laid down in the middle of the street and stopped traffic.
Okay.
Dang.
We just stopped traffic. This is rush hour. We just laid down.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then also, yes, go ahead.
This is the week before the students took over the A building at Howard University. So we segued from that into Howard University. So we were up there occupying the building for 4 days. On the fifth day, they told us if we didn't vacate, they were sending in the Metropolitan Police. And whatever they did to us, they were going to do to us. So what I remember at about 11:15, they telling us that we had to be out by noon. So we didn't know if that meant they were taking us to jail or shooting us or sending dogs in there, what they were going to do. But I remember this. I remember looking at the clock ticking down to noon. And I'm standing there. I'm 19 years old. I'm thinking, well, nice a day as any to die. If I'm going to die, I'm going to die for a reason.
Right.
And I remember the exhilaration of taking my death in my own hands. Like, okay, so I'm going to die. Okay. I'm going to die a warrior. That's what I'm getting ready to do. I'm going to die today. And I thought about that because because the children are in the A building again. They've been
right.
in there for 6 days now. And it brought all this back to mind to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, also, too, Ms. Hope, I'd like to ask you, ma'am. Okay, so if you recall, because like I said, when Dr. King was assassinated, I was only like about 9 years old. But could you reflect back of what was happening across the country with the civil disturbances, of how the National Guard was being called out throughout the
okay.
various states?
Let me give you some background about King, since you were a child and you have no way of knowing. You only know
yes,
what
ma'am.
You read. At that time,
okay, like
at
me,
that
please.
Time, King, hello? What did you say?
Yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm here. Please enlighten
time,
me.
At that time, King had lost his credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And he was almost despised at the
time
of his assassination.
Okay, how did he lose his credibility?
At the time of his assassination, he was almost despised. He had gotten involved with the anti-war movement, primarily
okay.
a white hippie kind of situation.
Right.
Oh,
okay. The ones that were, yeah.
Understand, please, that I'm a black nationalist.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm a black nationalist, okay?
That's right.
All the folks who were with me, we were all nationalists. Pan-Africanists,
yes,
black
ma'am.
Nationalists,
yes,
cultural
ma'am.
Nationalists. That's what we were about, okay? King,
yes,
of course, was an integrationist. King was an integrationist and an accommodationist, apologist. That's what he was. We tolerated him
okay.
because we felt that he had outserved his
Mm-hmm.
His strategy was outdated. And he was a nuisance at this point.
Okay.
If black folks were going to be free, that we had to engage in another strategy. So King was in town. King came to D.C. the last week of March 1968. He called a meeting with the local folks in the community, the activist community. When you say, okay, you throw me off, brother, you make me lose my train of thought, okay? All right. So I accompanied Stokely to the meeting at the Church of the Redeemer that evening. When we got there, Jesse Jackson, James Bevel, Hosea Williams, Abernathy, and King were there. That's an Andrew Young too was there at the meeting. King wanted to explain to us his notion and mission for the Poor People's March, all of which nobody in our group wanted to hear. Nobody wanted to hear anything about Poor People's March, any folks coming to town, all because we felt since that cop had killed that boy and brought over daylight a few days before, that wasn't a good
mm-hmm.
thing because it would be open season on black folks. What is he thinking? You know, he's going to, it's like lamb to a slaughter.
Right.
So he slipped up. King slipped up. First of all, when we walked in there, we were like making fun of him because he's sitting there with these gold cufflinks on, and the light was hitting the gold cufflinks slow. It was like lightning flashing. We were looking at that his cufflinks and his gold watch, making fun of him, like, good Lord, look at that watch, look at those cufflinks. You know, we were just really giving him a fit, poor thing. And so he said something about people in the ghetto. Now, I don't know if you know D.C. Have you ever been to D.C.? D.C. is
I was born in D.C.
Okay,
go
D.C.
ahead, sister, I was born in D.C.
Oh, okay, so you born in D.C. Where did you grow up?
1958, I lived 1307 F Street Northwest, right off of Capitol Hill.
Okay, so you're from Capitol Hill. All right, so he slipped up and said something about the ghetto. Now he's sitting at the New School of Afro-American Thought, and folk in D.C. don't refer at that time to any ghetto. We look
right.
at D.C. as a black community. So when he said the ghetto, it's not like we have tenements and big, huge projects. You know, it's a little different. But when he said the ghetto, everybody took offense. Like, what are you talking about? You know, it's a black community. Mm-hmm. Talk about the black
right.
community. Don't talk about the ghetto.
Right.
Right. So he was put off with that. So it went downhill
right.
from there. So
yes.
Stokely said to him, listen, we got to think about another strategy. All this marching and stuff is no good. We're going to have to
right.
get our people prepared to fight, because it's going to be an armed struggle. And King sat there. He sat there. He was just so recalcitrant. He was sitting there. I could see his eyes getting real beady, and he was getting puffed up. And he said, no. He said, I must be consistent. And he spit those words out. I'll never forget it. He spit those words out. No sooner had he spit out, I must be consistent, Stokely jumped up. When
mm-hmm.
Stokely stood up, we all did.
Mm-hmm.
We stood up and booed. We booed King. We waved our arms. We booed him.
Mm-hmm.
And stood up, turned our back, and walked off and left him sitting there. I never forget that. As I walked out the room that evening, I turned around to look at him. He's sitting there looking perplexed, not so much disgruntled. He was broken. He was broken.
Right.
He was frustrated. He was
mm-hmm.
humiliated, and he was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That look in his face
mm-hmm.
was so pitiful. And I've seen it in my mind over these years. I played it back in my mind. That he couldn't do anything else but be consistent. He was right. He said he had to be consistent. And he was consistent. I get really upset when I hear young folk who don't know any better. I got into it with somebody today, said that King got fed up and he was changing. King wasn't changing a damn thing. Because within a week he was dead. Within a week he was dead. He, to the very end, he said he had to be consistent. I sat there and looked right in his face when he said it. He wasn't changing nothing. The only thing he did was get involved in the Vietnam movement, which wasn't that popular with black folks in 68 at that time. Even though our lover was over there, that was a white hippie thing. We weren't in the Edelman movement at that time.
Okay, now let me ask you this here, though, sister. Okay, the heavyweight champion at that time, he was very, very outspoken about the war in Vietnam. And I do remember from what I've seen as a child, and please correct me if I'm wrong, was that he was on the lecture movement as well, too, you know, speaking against the war in Vietnam and standing up for his right as a conscience objector. And also, too, sister, I would like to know, when Dr. King was assassinated, did this here cause a huge increase in the black liberation movement? Basically, the crux of that question is, did people go from the integrationist philosophy to the black nationalist pan-Africanist philosophy?
Okay. All right. Well, let me say this. I've been posting all day Stokely's speech at the press conference. And I was listening to it. I listened to it about seven times with tears in my eyes, because I stood there at the press conference listening to the words when he said them that day. And he was saying that white America would have been better off had they killed him and or H. Rapp Brown instead of King. Because now that black, the white folks can't, where they, Where can they go? Because King wasn't a threat. He said, I'm a threat. H. Red Brown is a threat.
Mm-hmm.
He said, because now I'm telling everybody, go get some guns.
Right, like what the Black Panther Party had emphasized then at that time in history.
Well, see, now you're mixing apples and oranges without actually knowing it. Let me say this because folk, like I said, when folks are there, they know what they know. But if you weren't involved, you don't know that was not the mix that you think it was. It was not the mix that you think it was. Huey was in jail.
Okay.
They sent Eldridge out on the road, which was a terrible thing to do because Eldridge is out of his mind. He's out of his mind.
Okay.
And Eldridge came to D.C. and offended everybody.
Okay.
For about 6 weeks, we were all merged. SNCC merged with the Black Panther Party, which meant that Stokely was the field marshal
mm-hmm.
for the Black Panther Party. So we went from SNCC to being Panthers overnight. But let me tell you what the problem was.
Okay.
When SNCC chose Stokely to be the director. When he was the director of SNCC, SNCC moved from a integrated organization of students. See, it started down in Mississippi with the Mississippi Freedom Party. It started off with the Lowndes County Freedom moved in 1964. They were the first ones to use the Black Panther as a logo.
Right. And here we took the idea for the party. Yes.
Okay. So, but the Black Panther Party didn't catch on in D.C. It caught on some other place, but it didn't catch on here. It was for several reasons. First of all, it was integrated, and the New School of Afro-American Thought and SNCC, they had banished all white folks out of SNCC. All the white folks out of SNCC. And the New School of Afro-American Thought wouldn't even allow white folks to cross the board still. So you can't come with us coming in with a whole bunch of hippie white girls talking about coming over here, you're gonna be with us. No, you're not gonna be with us. No, that was the problem. So at the Black Panther headquarters here in D.C., that's where the white girls hung out and all the hippy-dippy black folks that wore sweatbands and feathers. That's where they hit. But they weren't over here about us. We're about nation. But you want to say something about the Black Panther Party in D.C., folks just look at you. Because we know what that was about.
Wow.
It wasn't about what we're about nation.
No, I'm saying wow, because my brother was a Panther. He used to put his little black hat on, and I was
that's
a little
right.
tiny girl, and
that's
I just
right.
never knew. But
that's
I know
right.
what I'm saying.
That's
I didn't know.
Right.
I didn't know that part you said about the white people was all up in the mix. That's really, really wild.
Yeah, well, that's where the party came from.
I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Where
yeah, it's because
from.
They do. No, it's because they do. They were doing a lot of.
This is the thing. This is what happens with anything with history. There are those who know. Listen. This is why this is what I see all that. There are those who were in. Then there were those who know people who were in. Then there were those who know somebody who was in. And those who have read about somebody they know that was in. See, it's all, you know, and those are all kinds of different kinds of stories and interpretations.
Right. This is the first time I have ever heard your history on it with the white people included. I've never heard that.
That's
so thank you so much.
But it's not a secret.
I'm thanking you because I never.
We're not going to belabor what you didn't know. We're not going to belabor that. I'm just telling you, white girls hung out with them. That's where they got their money from. Okay?
They got their money from the
trust fund babies.
That's crazy.
The trust fund babies that hung out with them. Okay? That's what was happening. Yeah, that's what was happening. Okay?
Wow.
All right.
Okay.
In the fall, okay, so where are we now? We're April of 68. What was your other question? Because, see, I got to answer these things chronologically.
Question? Okay, the next question, ma'am, is that during when the riots were going on after Dr. King's assassination?
I have to stop you.
Okay,
okay.
Sure.
First of all, black people have never rioted. Black people have never,
yes, ma'am,
ever rioted. White folks riot. White folks, when white folks riot, they win a game, they lose a game.
Right.
They break somebody out of prison and they lynch them. Those are riots. A riot is a mindless activity of violence. Just mindless activity. Black folks rebel.
All right.
Black folks revolt. Black folks have insurrections, and they are responding. It's a political response to institutionalized racism. It's a political response. Don't ever minimize what we do by calling a riot. That's mindless bullshit. Black folks don't go out burning up people's houses. They go for a commercial property. And if a residence is in close proximity to that house, is a residence close proximity to commercial property, it gets damaged. But when crackers come, what do they do?
Yes,
they're killing children, women, they're burning down schools, hospitals, theaters.
Yes, ma'am.
There's no cut cards.
Yeah,
black folks are going after the liquor store. They're going after the liquor store. They're going after that Jewish store that stole Big Mama's money and gave her money back. This is resurrection of the mental dead.
And it's funny you should say that, sisters, because I was in Los Angeles in 1992, and that's exactly what we refer to it as the rebellion in 1992. That was not a riot. That was a downright rebellion. You see what I'm saying? In 1992, and it was a result of the same damn thing of what happened 50 years ago, just like what is currently going up here in the city of Sacramento, California, 50 years to the north, where they shot this man 8 times in his back. Over here 2 years ago, the San Francisco Police Department murdered this man, Mario Woods, where they put 25 bullets in him. See, this is murder.
No,
this is state-sanctioned murder. So, yes, ma'am, so I definitely appreciate you there, Ms. Vera Hope, you know, for definitely resurrecting the mental dead and erasing my ignorance, sister. Come on with it. Please drop some more knowledge, ma'am.
Yes, Lord.
I wish you would encourage our people to stop using these terms to demoralize and to discredit our people. It triggers me.
And which terms
because
are those, ma'am?
White folks, I'm talking about riot. White folks rioted Houston, Texas. White folks rioted in Houston, Texas because a black man fought a police officer that was beating a black woman.
Yes,
ma'am. So they called out the police, and the brothers happened to be in the army. They fought back. What did the crackers do? Lynched 14 brothers, court martial. Read about it, the Houston court martial. Hung them.
Yeah.
That was 100 years ago in 1918, I believe.
Exactly. Yeah, 1918. So it's better that we got to keep it clear. How they do things and how we do things. Now let me tell you something.
Ma'am.
I lived in L.A.
Okay.
And I was there.
I grew up there.
April 29th, 1992.
So was I. I was there too.
Okay. I went to First AME Church.
We just some air. I know it right over there off of LaSalle and 27th near Adams and Western Avenue where they burned down Dying Ray Market around the corner from there. I did security for Rosa Parks there at that same church there when I was 21 years old. Yes, ma'am. I know exactly where you're at. Come on with it.
I've met Miss Rosa. Okay. All right. So a harvest scene. It's up there on Hobart and Harvest. Okay. So
yes,
so
ma'am.
Our minister, Tip Murray said to all of us, because you know Mayor Bradley is a member of our congregation. Mayor Bradley, Montel Williams, Montel Jordan,
Ralph,
Violet Woman, everybody, Bill Warwick, everybody's up and through there. Okay? So he said,
yes, ma'am.
Whenever the verdict comes in, day and night, I want all of y'all to come to church so we can sit down, strategize as to what our next move is going to be. Well, if you recall, the verdict came in about 11 o'clock during the day. I got dressed and had to pick up my four sons at all four of their schools.
Right.
And I remember this. I remember being at the light on the corner of Slauson and Crenshaw.
I know the corner very well.
You know that corner, don't you? Okay.
I'm there. Very well. Yes. Where Mr. Jim's barbecue was right there.
Yes.
That's where everybody's standing out there on that island.
Right.
Selling incense, selling the newspaper.
Right.
Know the corner very well.
Right there.
Crenshaw.
That's where I am. I'm right there at the light. And so this sister sat beside me. This sister looked at me. She looked at me. I looked at her. She looked at me. I looked at her. She said, that was fucked up, wasn't it? I said, it sure was. She said, but that's all right, though, ain't it? I said, yeah, it's all right. But what struck me was that it was no breeze blowing. It was no birds chirping. You know how all them little parrots come up from Mexico and stuff and be chirping in the trees. It wasn't no birds chirping. Wasn't no breeze blowing.
Right.
Wasn't no horn signing.
Right.
It was no noise at all. I thought, that's weird. This is too weird.
Ma'am.
Everything still. Everything was too still. I picked up the boys. I picked up my sons. And we were going up to First AME Church. Brother, I want to tell you, I couldn't get no closer to the church than the corner of Western and Adams.
Wow.
Okay, right, because Don Ray Market
was
on fire. There was looting.
I couldn't get no closer. By the time I got up there, everybody, they was parked. Listen, their cars parked. You had Golden State is on that corner. They got their cars going all around the corner on the sidewalk, that kind of way. So I had to park my car right there where that big filling station is. You know, going to
the
one on that filling station on the other. So I parked my car without thinking beside that where the old telephone company was and the filling station.
Right.
Parked my car right there, and me and the boys walked over to the church. We get to the church. Yeah, we go to the church. And Mayor Bradley going into the side door. He going into the side door. I see a hand. Listen to this. I see a hand coming up out of the crowd and slapped him upside his head.
Dang.
Who was that to slap Mayor Tom upside his head?
I don't know. It was a hand that came up
Mayor
to the crowd
Bradley
and
was a
slapped
big dude.
Mayor
he
Bradley
was six
upside
five.
His head. I saw that.
Okay.
This is what I want to say to folks. I want you to hear me real good.
Yes,
First
ma'am.
AME has a congregation of about 16,000 to 18,000 people. It's not a hard-time church. When they lift an offering at that church, they got big money in there. You don't see no jitneys and no hoopsies up in that parking lot. You got Mercedes and them BMWs.
Yep.
Everybody living good, looking good, got good jobs up and through there, okay? So we ain't talking about no ragtag folk up in there. So when you got folks that work in the industry and they all worked up, these people were worked up. They wanted to fight. They were worked up.
Yes, ma'am, absolutely.
I've never seen nothing like it was ready for blood. They really were. So I'm in there,
And then I recall too there, Sister Fair, is that they had announced on the TV that they had let the guys go, and the officers involved in that. There was Stacy Coon, Ted Brasino, Timothy Nguyen, and Lawrence Powell. And so then what had happened is that we all know is that the jurors in Simi Valley in Ventura County had came on the public airwaves there in the city of Los Angeles in 1992, and they had stated that Rodney King had got what he deserved, where he was beaten 52 times by the Los Angeles Police Department, a Foothill Division, right there on the corner of Terrabella and Osborne, there in an area that they call Lakeview Terrace in the city of Los Angeles, in LAPD's Foothill Division. But most definitely there on that day, Sister Vera, you are absolutely correct about where the first AME church was, and they did was having a press conference from there where they did have a lot of major people of influence from the city of Los Angeles speaking there, but also, too, everybody was fed up with the hypocrisy of the situation of where these officers were seen on videotape. They did go to trial, in which they were acquitted in the state trial, and George Bush, when he had sent in the regular army, of the U.S. military into Los Angeles that night, April 30th or May the 1st of 1992, in addition to the California National Guard, President Bush did state that I'm charging these guys here, having the Attorney General picking them up and having them charged with federal civil rights violations. Now, you see, now this is where I fought Barack Obama's ass at. You see, when he was the president, when these police officers are murdering our people this day, and they're not even being charged with the crime, but we're going to be emphasizing more on that in 2 days when we do the show on little Bobby Hutton, who was murdered by the Oakland Police Department April 6, 1968 in Oakland, California. And once again, I am emphasizing those out in the 510 area code to please call in and to drop knowledge on that, as Sister's doing this evening, Sister Vera's doing this evening, in regard to the day that Dr. King was assassinated. And like I said, I was a child at that time, but Sister is definitely...
I digress so much. Oh, let me get back to that day. Let me get back to that. Let me get back to the actual day that he was assassinated.
April 4th, 1968. Yes, ma'am.
Did you read the excerpts that I wrote?
Yes, ma'am. I was checking your post out there earlier today. Yes, and this is why we extended the invitation for you to give us a call to drop this knowledge.
Okay. All right. So let me cut to the chase. Okay. As you noticed, I was coming out of the movie theater, and when I came out of the movie theater, people were running down the street, and the first incident of broken glass was at the corner from the movie theater. My friend who was with me put me in a taxi and sent me home. Unbeknownst to me at the time, he left and went to Memphis.
Okay.
So I went home. Okay. So this is what blew my mind. As the taxi, have you ever been to D.C.?
No, ma'am.
You've never been to D.C.? Okay. Well, anyway, there's
a
very
steep... No, ma'am. I've been no further east than Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, okay. So you haven't been to East Coast. But anyway, got to come to D.C., though. But, as the taxi was ascending this very steep hill in D.C. to take me home, when we got to the crest of the hill, there's a little corduroy of brothers, a little ragtag group of little brothers. It couldn't have been no more than 12 years old, about five of them. The word has spread that fast. They're up there at the top of the hill with rock, bottles, broken bricks. They got to that top because you don't know, because the grade of the hill is something like 50 degrees.
Right.
So you can't see at the top of you. You just going up. But once you got to the top and they could see what's in that car, bricks, bottles, everything. I saw it. Blew my mind.
Sister, can I ask you exactly where this was in D.C.?
On 13th Street here in Canosa. Cadoza
okay,
Hill.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, I got you. I know where that is.
You know Cadoza Hill?
Oh, yeah. No question.
Okay, so the little brother's at the top of the hill. You know
okay.
where you know where Clifton Terrace is on the left side. And
yes,
the little brother's
yes.
on the Cadoza side. They were on the Cadoza side, right there at the top
mm-hmm.
of the hill. So when them cars
oh.
came up to that top of the hill, boy,
yes.
bricks, bottles, everything.
Oh, yeah, okay. Damn.
That thing, it blew my mind. It was funny.
Hey.
On one hand, it was funny, but on the other hand, the look of determination
mm-hmm.
in their little eyes, their little ashy faces, I can see them now, like, we doing our part.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most definitely.
We doing our part. They little soldiers.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
They just like the little Palestinian kids. The infantada. They
mm-hmm.
the little urban 13th Street infantada. They had their stuff, and you know it's like somebody called them up and okay, y'all supposed to be on point now, and they were, and that's what they did. That's
okay.
what they did. So when
right.
I got home, when I got home, my mother was on the porch. I mean, my mom was pacing back and forth, cussing and pacing, crying.
What part of town was this, baby? What part of town was your home?
Huh? What?
What part of town? What part of town? Yes.
Fort Smith, Colorado.
Okay, I got you. That's uptown, right?
Up, yes, up as town you can get. Right there in the Carter Barron. That's
ooh,
where I grew up.
There.
Right there in the Carter Barron.
All right now. All right.
We live so close to the Carter Barron that we could hear Nelson Riddle. We could hear Nelson Riddle's orchestra in the backyard, but
that's
since
right.
it was segregated, we couldn't go in there.
That's right. Oh God. Oh God. I didn't even know I was a baby. Lord have mercy.
The first time I went into
my
the Carter Barron. Well, first I went to the Carter Barron, Stokely Carmichael took me in there to see Ray Charles in the summer of 1968. Right
okay.
after he,
okay.
right after this, the summer of 68, he took me to see Ray Charles.
Okay.
Okay.
I got you.
Okay. Now let me ask you this, Sister Vera. Were you in Oakland by any time, you know, during the time when they were having a protest to free Huey Newton in front of the Alameda County Courthouse there as well, too?
No. My sister was Stokely's secretary. She was there. She was on that scene. She was somebody played her in the movie when they stayed out in front of the Oakland courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
She stayed out there with Stokely. Yeah. No, I didn't travel with her. She traveled all over the world with him.
Wow.
Okay. It's because I saw Stokely Carmichael speak about 1973 at Cal State Hayward, which is just about 12 or 15 miles south of there.
My children,
but now they
my
call it Cal. Okay,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and I shook hands with him, and you know, and it's very, very interesting. At that time, when I was a child going into my adolescence and what have you, witnessing that history and not knowing what was going on, and then
mm-hmm.
50 years later, after all of this, is how they try to dummy down our youth. I mean, they got it straight. Twisted. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's because one thing, and I'm sure you know that both these sisters can relate, and definitely emphasize this on here too, Sister Vera. When we heard OTBs call us with that NGR term, we used to beat their ass, you know, and I don't understand
oh, yeah.
of how we got dummied
yeah.
down with this Kool-Aid and this bullshit. But I blame
we
it on the rapping.
Ourselves.
Yeah, you know, I'm seeing
yes.
all these other groups of people using this NGR term, you know, like it's the thing to do. And I remember we used to put our foot in their asses. And we had our mind, they had our and we had their minds right with that for a long
well, can
time.
I ask
but
a
then
question?
When,
can I ask
sure.
a question, please? So while I'm
sure.
on social media, I'm seeing the same term, but it's spelled N-E-G-U-S-S or something like that. What is that?
Huh?
Niggas. N-E-G-U-S-S. Is that real?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about it, please.
Yeah,
can you
yeah,
explain
yeah,
that
yeah.
to me?
I don't know. I can't make out what she's saying. What?
Oh,
okay,
N-
now, What's
as in Nancy, E-G-U-S-S. And this is a popular spelling of the word. It's supposed to mean nigger. Black people.
I would know. They got a longer line. I would know because I don't deal on that level. I wouldn't know.
I don't know either.
Right.
I truly don't know.
Okay.
I'm trying
don't
to make
okay.
some sense
and
of it.
And I don't need to know that either. That's some. I call it some bad.
Yeah,
you know,
I think me personally,
stuff.
I think that there's some cognitive dissonance shit. Myself is because I've seen those on social media. You know, said, well, this is a great term. You know, what we were, it means king and all that. But then as I travel through my everydays, I see these crackers and cave beasts using this term quite loosely. You see what I mean? And
right,
this is what I mean
right.
by where we got dummied down in the 80s and the 90s, and I blame it on these rap cats constantly using this NGR term in their lyrics. And this is why I've said on my podcast many a times, and I will say it again, if you cats are going to use that NGR term, please come up with some derogatory terms so white people and the other groups of people on there to have the equal opportunity, since everybody's so fucking colorblind and they could miss me with that bullshit. So, yeah,
right, exactly.
Karal said that. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, and anybody don't dig
yeah.
it, you're welcome to call up and let's have a conversation about it. The phone number is 646-564-9630. Press 1 to speak live on the air. But I'm very, very curious on that one. And in the future, I'm going to be doing a show just on that. And I want all you cats out there in this rap business that use this damn term about why you're not using other derogatory terms or other ethnicities, although I already know the answer.
As long as they're talking about blowing each other's brains out and doing all kinds of despicable things to each other.
Yes, ma'am.
They make money.
Yes, ma'am. It's
and they don't think nothing of
family
it.
Unit. Exactly.
They don't think nothing
that's
of it. They don't never talk
down.
About doing nothing to no crackers, you know. So
exactly.
I don't even want to
exactly.
talk. I don't want to talk about that, you know, because
yes,
everybody's not ready for liberation. Everybody ain't ready for
exactly.
liberation, and everybody ain't going to be liberated. Some are going to have to be left behind, and I can't worry about it. I'm not concerned either, I'll tell you that. I'm not concerned.
Okay, I feel you on
that.
Because
there. Because they to be concerned about traitors, collaborators, bottom
that's
feeders.
Right.
I don't want them in Wakanda no way. I'll tell you that.
I feel you, sister, and also, too, ladies and gentlemen, we're winding down, and I definitely want to give everybody a shout-out that called in and to all our listeners, and we definitely appreciate you so very, very much, and also, too, Brother Isaiah, thank you for calling in. Sister DeMacy, thank you for calling in. Sister Vera, we definitely appreciate your input tonight of the knowledge that you had related, and you have erased a lot of my ignorances because, like I said, I was a child. At that time, you know, when that there
absolutely.
Was going on.
And
then
sister.
Also, too, and please, sister, definitely give us a call in 2 days on April the 6th is because our next show will be on the police murder of Lil Bobby Hutton that occurred in Oakland, California, April 6th, 1968. And you can definitely, you know, give us a call here at 646-564-9630. Also, to our followers and listeners, please follow our show, Shabaka's Black Experience. Enhanced as well too. We'll keep you updated, you know, on our upcoming shows that we have coming up for here in the year 2018. We're definitely going to be doing more shows this year on a lot of the dynamics that did happen 50 years ago in the year 1968. So I'm going to go on there and give everybody a few minutes to go on there where they could put their information out there of how they could be contacted and any closing comments that they have. And we're going to start with you, Sister Vera, then we're going to go with Sister DeMacy, then we're going to go over to Brother Isaiah, then I'm going to go to myself, and we're going to close out. All right, Sister Vera.
Well, what I can say is that that the tension in D.C. that day was, see, we didn't know, that's why I was telling people today, we didn't know if that was the start of the revolution or not. I posted mm-hmm. what Stokely had to say, and they were concerned about his presence of mind. What are you telling people? Are you telling people to get guns? You say, yeah, I'm telling them to get guns. Well, what are they going to do with the guns? They're going to protect themselves. Well, what about you? You get killed. He said, if I'm going to die, we all going to die anyway. You need to be worried about yourself. Don't worry about
wow.
me. Don't you worry about me. And I posted that three times, and it's on YouTube. It's Stokely, April 5th, 1968, talks about retaliation. So I was
there. Okay, where did you give this speech at, ma'am?
Excuse me?
Okay, where did Stokely give that speech at?
At the New School of Afro-American Thought, 2208 14th Street, Northwest. I was right there.
Okay, and that was in Washington, D.C. or Oakland?
Washington, D.C. Washington,
yes,
everything's
ma'am. Okay,
happening
you,
in D.C., darling. And what, we weren't doing nothing in Oakland
then,
that day.
Yeah.
We were in D.C. D.C.
Right.
was
okay.
the nexus of what was happening. Because, see, he mm-hmm. had just left. Then listen, he had just left D.C.
Mm-hmm.
King had left
mm-hmm.
D.C. and went to Memphis. That's the part I'm trying
wow.
to tell you.
Wow.
Yes, ma'am. No,
he was just there
yes,
with
ma'am.
Him, and he was dead in days.
Dang.
Wow. Can I ask you a question, sister? Do you mind if I send you a friend request from D. Macy Love?
No, I don't mind, but like I tell everybody, I am a black nationalist. I'm a pan-African.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
And if,
right.
if folk ain't about that, they can't come up, they
That's
can't
right.
hang with me. I ain't about kumbaya.
Right.
I ain't about nobody that got little multicultural grandchildren, all that stuff. That's fine.
Yes,
That's
ma'am.
Fine. I ain't mad at you. But you just can't come up with my little thing. I'm sorry.
I got you. I would have never
yeah,
asked
because,
you
yes,
if
ma'am,
I wasn't there with
you. I just want you.
You
to hear me. I just want you to hear me.
I got you, baby.
Because that causes a lot of confusion. Because folks are gonna be loyal to what they love, and with my folks over here, we're about repatriation. We're about the Exodus. We're talking about
yes, ma'am.
We're gonna make our Wakanda.
Absolutely.
We're gonna make our Wakanda. But that's what we
that's
we
right.
about. I've been trying to
ma'am.
Get to Wakanda for 50 years. I ain't playing.
That's what's almost black experience.
I'm almost 70 years old. I gotta see Wakanda before I die. I gotta see it. Okay, I ain't playing. I ain't got how many more days left. I gotta get out of here.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and we thank you so very, very much. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that there concludes Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced tonight, ladies
thank
and
you.
Gentlemen. 50 years here, you know, after Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated here. Our air date for this episode is April 5th, 2018. And we're going to leave out with the one and only Tupac's auntie.
This is the 21st century, and we
love.
Need to redefine revolution. This planet needs a people's revolution, a humanist revolution. Revolution is not about bloodshed or about going to the mountains and fighting. We'll fight if we are forced to. But the fundamental goal of revolution must be peace. Revolution of the mind. We need a revolution of the heart. We need a revolution of the spirit. The power of people is stronger than any weapon. this world, user